Okay, well, it's that time of the week again, the Lily White Spotlight, and this week we are going to the south of the county and to the town of Athy, where on the line is local historian Frank Taff. Good morning, Frank, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So we're looking at Athy, as I said, and I was only here recently at a match out in Castle Mitchell, drove through the town of Athy. Something that struck me, Frank, is this seems to be a town that has something for everybody in the audience, nearly. There's so much happening.
I must say, yes, in one respect, I've been talking quite recently to a lot of people who've moved into Athy recently. Population of Athy staggered around 4,000 for over 100 years. And within the last 20 years or more, it has jumped to about 10,000, which compared to Naas or Newbury is quite small, but it's a huge increase for the South Clare town, you know. And a lot of those people are from Dublin, would you believe? And I've been talking to many of those that I've come across recently. I've been asking them how they like Athy. And without question, every single person says they love the town of Athy. They like it. Their only complaint is in terms of the lack of quality of shopping, let's put it that way, you know. But in terms of the facilities in the town, the walks, the sporting facilities, etc., and the schools, they are extremely pleased to have moved into the South Clare town.
Great stuff. Tell us a little bit more about those groups, Frank. I know you're involved with the Lions Club yourself, also out there at the showgrounds, the GAA Club, the Rugby Club, really at the heart of the community.
It is indeed. You know, Athy is one of the great sporting towns, certainly in Kildare. You know, if you look at the facilities we have here, we have most of a unique sporting facility on the Dublin Road where we're catering for the rugby club, the GAA club, the soccer club, the tennis club and the cricket club all within the same grounds. It's a huge complex. And if we go out to the Monastreven Road, all of our schools, both secondary schools, primary schools and community college, they're all located in this educational complex out there. So in that regard, Athy is well serviced in terms of schools and in terms of clubs, etc.
Just stick with me on the schools for a moment, Frank. How have they changed down through the years? Maybe, as you mentioned, the population growth from 4,000 up to 10,000 in recent years. The schools would have had to grow too.
The schools definitely have. When I went to primary school, I always describe myself, I'm a Kilkenny man exiled in Kildare. I was born in Castle Cromer.
Right.
But my family moved to the Athy when I was quite young. I went to the Christian Brothers School here in the Athy, and I can remember I did my Leaving Cert many, many years ago, 1960 in fact. And it was only the highest number of pupils in that Leaving Cert class ever in that Christian Brothers School. There was 11 of us. And incidentally, we're having a reunion in the next couple of weeks where one of our ex-pupils is coming back from Australia. But all of that changed in 1967. When O'Malley brought in the free, well, supposed to be free education. Nowadays, I believe there's something like maybe 120 boys alone doing Leaving Cert down the Athy colleges. You know, it's a huge change.
What were the facilities like back in the late 50s, early 60s?
Yeah, the facilities in the 1950s were very basic. I remember the secondary school in Athy for the Christian Brothers, and it was the only secondary school. We had a technical school as well. But the only secondary school, and it consisted of three rooms on the upstairs of a building built in the 1920s and a partition between two classes. But the classes are very small. And this is the one thing that I always felt so sad about. There was, when we all started school at 4 and 5, there may have been 50 or 60 young boys and young girls in classes. It was all boys those days. But by the time you went through the primary cert and you went to Leaving Cert, boys were dropping out. And by the time we got to my Leaving Cert, we had 11. A couple of years before that, there was only one boy in the Leaving Cert class. Now, I always felt so sorry and so sad for those young boys who went to school with me at a very early age, who never had the opportunity to achieve what they might have achieved if they got an education. But everybody nowadays has that opportunity.
They do, absolutely. And it's interesting the way you talk about those numbers there, Frank. And it also got me thinking about maybe the socialising that would have went on between the boys' school and the girls' school, maybe dances that would have happened. Where did you socialise in Athy?
Well, I mean, but this way, there was very little contact with the boys and girls. I know we all went out and had our first girlfriends when we were 15 or 16. But I do remember in the Intercert, there was an Irish Intis Ogre, or was it Cora, I think it was called, I'm not quite sure. We started an Irish class where the girls joined us as well, and we used to have dances, Kelly dances, in the town hall on a Sunday afternoon. That's where we first came across the girls who we subsequently with, I must say. It was a lovely time.
And then was there a Deb's ball and all at that stage?
Not at all. There was no such thing as a Deb's ball. We all came from lower middle class, let's put it that way. My father was a sergeant here in the Thai, but the pay for the Gardaí in those days was so serious. My father never had a car. We never had a car until he retired, and he bought a little second-hand Morris Minor. But the point is, there was no such thing as Deb's balls in those days, you know. You went down the line, as we called it here in the Fine. That's where you did your courting with your girlfriend. But there was no discourse.
Where did you do that courting then, Frank?
What do we refer down the line? Down the line, which is the Barrow walkway. But it was a lovely time when you look back at the young days, you know, and it is a very innocent time. And not so innocent as well, you know, but yeah.
Indeed.
We had a good life.
What about the landscape then, Frank, in terms of maybe the buildings that are in the town that were there at that stage and are now gone? Is there any to stick out for you, shops that are no longer there?
Well, the point is the townscape has not changed very much in the centre of the town. The buildings that were there 100 years are still there. The facades might be changed, the names over the buildings might have changed, etc. Where the changes can be seen in the site are on the outskirts, where new housing estates, private and public housing estates, have been built. And there have been quite a lot of building, although not very much building in the last 10 years. But prior to that, in the 1990s and 2010s, there was quite a lot of building and new estates. But the centre of the town has not changed, let's put it this way. You had still had the same medieval roadways that were laid down 700 or 800 years ago. They're still following the same pattern. The same buildings that were there in the 1890s are still by and large there as well.
Okay, it's interesting as well that you mention the way the town has kind of moved out and spread out around Athy, and that is one thing that I noticed when I was down there recently, is the amount of little townlands that arise around Athy, because when we mention that town name, Athy, it takes in so much more than just a town centre.
It does indeed, because it was only yesterday I was out with one of my grandchildren out to a party in Grange, Northern. And I came across a Grange Northern GA pitch called the Murphy, and I was trying to find out exactly whom it is named after. But when you look at the sporting facilities around the site, Castle Mitchell, St. Lawrence's, Grange Northern, wonderful sporting facilities, and Ribbon as well. All fine pitches, floodlit, et cetera, and as is the Athy one as well. Tremendous sporting facilities around the town of Athy. And in the hinterland as well.
And with that, a lot of rivalry. I've been to a couple of games between Castle Mitchell and Ribbon, or Grange and Castle Mitchell. They're good fun for the neutral.
They may well be, but certainly the rivalry nowadays is not as tough as it was in the 1950s or early 60s, I can tell you. I played for Athy minors and juniors and seniors, and I can tell you matches between Athy and Castle Mitchell were brutal affairs in those days.
Were they?
Back in the late 50s, early 60s. Brutal affairs.
But after the game, Frank, I'm sure you could enjoy a pint or whatever the case may be after with the lads from Castle Mitchell.
Well, generally speaking, let me put this, the guys I played for, they didn't drink. They didn't go to pints. I don't drink, and I haven't drank, you know.
Right.
But I never remember going to a pub with, you know, never. That was something that the rugby players then.
Right.
When they went to Bapti Mars, that's where they used to dress and tog out, etc., down in Lenson Street, Bapti Mars. Famous hostelry, let's put it that way.
And also, people within Athy, Frank, they've, you know, made national headlines, worldwide headlines, and I know Colin Walsh does great work with the Maid of Athy project, and a lot of people trace their roots back to Athy, so it's produced a lot of, you know, famous people.
It has indeed, and this is one of the things, the weekly article which I write for the Nationalists, it's amazing the response it gets from Australia and America, and from England particularly, people whose parents or who themselves left Athy in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They seem to pick up on the article and there are always questions, etc. But point is, we had so many famous people here, you know, and not all of it would be recognised. You know, we had obviously the Ernest Shackleton, who was represented here. Reverend Thomas Kelly, the guy who founded the Kellyites, a dissenting Protestant group, and had his own church here in the Fine, one in Dublin and one in another part. And his namesake, Patrick O'Kelly, 98 Patriot, who was Thomas Lefroy, went to school here. He was subsequently appointed Chief Justice, and he was a former boyfriend of Jane Austen, the writer. Lord Edward Fitzgerald represented the Fies as an MP. Wolf Tone was a barrister in practice here in the Fie, representing his clients here in the town hall and the courthouse. And, of course, probably one of the most famous and most well-forgotten is Peter Corcoran, born in the Fie in the mid-1800s, or mid-18th century, and he was a world boxing champion. Left the Fie after he murdered somebody here, but subsequently became world champion. But one of the great men whom I'm sure many of the older population will remember was J.J. Bergen, founder of the Ploughing Championship, Ploughing, and also with Canon Hayes, was one of the founding members of Mochnatua. He was a great, great man who did much for FI during his time. I'm a member of the Federation of Local History Societies. Larry Breen, an ace man, is the secretary of that in the PRO. But a couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, the Federation, we started a project called Hidden Gems and Forgotten People, where every local history society throughout Ireland were asked to nominate people from their area who did good works or did good things in their time, but who are now forgotten. This is something that happens in every town and every village. You know, the past generation who did so much, if I'm talking about a tie, do so much for a tie, are now completely written out of history, are now forgotten. And this is something I try to do in my article every week, to try and recall the events that were important in the past and those people who were involved in those events and who made a good contribution to the development of the town as we know it today.
It's a great town, Frank, I have to say, and I'm sure you can vouch for that, having lived there the majority of your life. Looking back at it, you know, it's great to talk about some of the memories that you have. What do you think lies in store for Athy? What do you think will happen next, or where will it go?
We're going through one of our cycles. Athy has gone through economic cycles where there are good times and bad times, okay? And we had good times in the 1960s here in Athy, where with the opening of Dreamland Ballroom and where the commercial life of the town was booming. And we're going through a pretty lean time at the present time, with so many shops on the main street which are closed. We're getting a new outer relief road which will be opened later on this year, I understand, and which will bring a lot of the through traffic away from the very centre of the town, which allow the local shopkeepers to develop and sort of market their town in a better way than they're doing at the present time. So I'm looking forward to hopefully will be an upgrade in the economic cycle of the town over the next 10 years or so.
Well, on that positive note, we'll finish there. That's Frank Taff, local historian, with that whistle-stop tour of Athy on our Lily White Spotlight this morning. Thanks for joining us, Frank.
Thank you, not at all. Delighted to talk to you.
All right, Frank Taff, of course, a man who has contributed a lot to the town over the last 50 plus years, a former councillor and also one of our local historians that brought us on a virtual history tour of Athy. You can listen back to that, by the way, on our website at www.kfmradio.com. It's under the podcast section. Coming up after the break, we have the HICWA inspection report of Og Hill Nursing Home in Monastrevin, and also the latest as the DUP announces it will oppose the British government in this week's first parliamentary vote on the new Windsor framework.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Now, following recent reports regarding a very negative HICWA inspection report on a Dublin nursing home, we decided to have a look at recent HICWA inspection reports on Kildare nursing homes. Five such reports have been published so far in 2023. Moyglare Nursing Home in Maynooth, Oghill Nursing Home in Monastrevin, Hazel Hall Nursing Home in Clane, Ashley Lodge Nursing Home in Kildare Town, and Craddock House Nursing Home in Naas. Yesterday, we profiled the report on Moyglare Nursing Home, which highlighted various issues that the HICWA report found. We informed the nursing home in Maynooth that we would be profiling the report and requested a statement. We've not received a reply. Today, we examined the inspection report on Oghill Nursing Home in Monastrevin. It was carried out last October, but it was only published on the 30th of January this year. Now, if we just start off by taking a look a little bit about the designated centre. Oghill Nursing Home is a private-run, family-run, 34-bedded centre open since 1997. The centre is situated in a rural setting a short drive from the town of Monastrevin. It's comprised of 24 single bedrooms and 5 twin bedrooms, all located on the ground floor. Communal rooms comprised of a sitting room, a day room, a conservatory, a dining room and a link lounge. The centre had an enclosed outdoor courtyard for residents, and the centre accepts both male and female residents over the age of 18 years and provides 24-hour care. And just to say from the outset, there's a number of residents that were there on the date of inspection were 31, and the nursing home was found to be compliant under all of the regulations. And Caoimhe, if we start off with Regulation 15 and staffing, what did the report say?
Yeah, on the day of the inspection, the inspector found that the number of skill mix of staff were appropriate to meet the assessed needs of the 31 residents living in the centre, given the size and layout of the centre own.
Okay, Regulation 16, training and staff development. Arrangements were in place to ensure the staff were facilitated to attend a wide variety of online and in-house training and professional development training to appropriate their roles.
Yeah, then Regulation 21, records. Records as set out in Schedules 2, 3 and 4 were kept in the centre and were made available for inspection. Records were stored safely and the policy on the retention of records was in line with regulatory requirements own.
Regulation 23, governance and management. Management systems were effectively monitoring quality and safety in the centre. Audits informed ongoing quality and safety improvements in the centre. There was a clearly defined management structure in place that identified lines of responsibility and accountability. A comprehensive annual review of the quality and safety of care delivered to residents in the centre for 2021 was completed with identified service improvement initiatives.
Then Regulation 24, own contract for the provision of services. A sample of the contracts of care was reviewed and they outlined the terms of which the residents shall reside in the centre. They were seen to include the room to be occupied and the occupancy of the room and details of any additional fees to be charged.
Regulation 34, complaints procedure. A centre-specific complaints policy was in place and available to staff. The complaints policy identified the nominated complaints officer and also included an appeals process as required by the legislation. Then if we go on to the next part of the report, which is quality and safety, again all compliant here for Oghill Nursing Home in Monastrevin, starting off with Regulation 11, Caoimhe, and visits.
Yeah, for visits own, they were not restricted and the visiting procedures in place reflected the current public health guidelines. Indoor visiting had resumed and the centre had arrangements in place to ensure the ongoing safety of residents there.
Regulation 27, infection control. There was generally good oversight and management of infection control practices in the centre during this inspection. The report says it was evident that the registered provider had implemented procedures in line with best practices for infection control, and the inspector observed improvements in the storage practices around the centre. The provider had installed 3 additional clinical hand wash basins in order to promote good hand hygiene practices in the centre.
Yeah, Regulation 28, fire precautions. The provider was found to be proactive in managing the fire safety risks in the centre, and the inspector found that there were adequate fire safety precautions in place.
Regulation 5, individual assessment and care plan for Oghill Nursing Home in Monastrevin. The inspector reviewed a sample of residents' care files and noted that each resident had a comprehensive assessment and appropriate care plans based on their assessed needs. Care plan reviews occurred every 4 months or when residents' needs changed. A variety of evidence-based clinical tools were used to assess needs, including mobility, nutrition and skin integrity.
Yeah, Regulation 6, healthcare. Regulation 6, healthcare, that was residents had timely access to medical, health and social care professionals. Residents also had good access to specialists such as geriatric and psychiatry of later life when required.
Yeah, Regulation 8, protection. There was a safeguarding policy in place. Staff had completed safeguarding training and were aware of what to do if they suspected any form of abuse. Staff spoken with on the day of the inspection were aware of what abuse is and what they would do if they witnessed or suspected any such incident. The centre is not acting as a pension agent for any residents. The final two then, Caoimhe, starting off with residents' rights.
Yeah, residents' rights to choice, privacy and dignity were respected in the centre. Residents' social activity needs were assessed and their needs were met with access to a variety of meaningful individual and group activity zone.
And finally then, Regulation 26, risk management. The provider had a risk management policy and risk register in place. It included the requirements set out in the regulation. There was evidence of centre-specific emergency plans to respond to major incidents. So that's the latest HICWA report on Oghill Nursing Home in Monastrevin. Entirely compliant across all those regulations, and that report is a matter of public record. If you want to read it in more detail, it's available on www.hicwa.ie/inspection reports. And tomorrow we will be profiling Hazel Hall Nursing Home in Clane. Thanks for that, Caoimhe.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, the government has insisted, that's the UK government has insisted, that it has no plans to renegotiate the Windsor framework after the DUP said it would vote against the deal in Parliament. Sir Geoffrey Donaldson said his party will vote against the Stormont break when it goes to the House of Commons on Wednesday. Joining me now is Niamh Campbell. She's a journalist with the Belfast Telegraph. Good morning, Niamh, and thanks for taking our call.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
So where do we stand now? What's the current state of play? And was this largely expected from the DUP's point of view?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't think anyone was too shocked. The government, Rishi Sunak and his government, has insisted they have no plans to renegotiate. And the Prime Minister's spokesman has said, you know, we remain confident this is the best deal for Northern Ireland. Geoffrey Donaldson, whenever the Windsor framework was announced just a little less than a month ago, the DUP sort of stressed, you know, we need to get down to the nitty-gritty and read the legal the sort of small print around it. And I think what the DUP and more hardline unionists are very annoyed about is that the Northern Ireland Secretary of State, Chris Heaton-Harris, sort of made out that this was going to be, that the Stormont break is probably the most controversial aspect of the Windsor framework deal. He sort of made out that it was going to be more of a sort of unionist veto than it is. So the DUP said that they would only agree to a deal on the Northern Ireland Protocol based on 7 tests or rules that they had set out. And one of those rules were that the people of Northern Ireland could have a say in making the laws that govern them. The Stormont break is based... Oh, sorry.
No, just to come in, yeah. So the Stormont break, it is designed to give MLAs a greater say on how EU laws are applied in Northern Ireland, and it would also allow a minority of Assembly members at Stormont to formally flag concerns about the imposition of new EU laws in Northern Ireland. That's a move that could see the UK government veto their introduction in the region. I think what maybe might anger some politicians in the North and maybe over in the UK and here in Ireland as well, is that the DUP were given time to consider this, and that's one of the things that came out was, you know, Geoffrey Donaldson saying his party needed to go away to have a look at it, to mull over the detail, but they've now come back and said, yeah, no, we're just going to oppose it.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think people realise as well, so this is the vote specifically about the storm and break on Wednesday in the House of Commons. And Geoffrey Donaldson has said himself that it's whatever the outcome of that is, it's indicative of how politicians will vote in the Windsor framework overall. So we're pretty certain that the DUP are just completely opposing the Windsor framework in general, because it technically does still mean that there's an Irish border in the sea. So I think their hardline unionist, TUV and the DUP, their real issue is that they feel that the constitutional status of Northern Ireland within the UK is still at jeopardy, even with the Windsor framework. And they feel like Chris Heaton-Harris and Rishi Sunak are sort of dressing it up to make it seem like it's not as bad as it is. Now, the UUP, so that's the ultra-unionists, they would be more of a moderate unionist party. Their leader, Doug Beattie, has said that the Windsor framework, it has changed things. It definitely has. It's given more economic and trade opportunities. But he does say as well that there still is the Irish border in the sea as well. And with the storm and break specifically, whenever they did read the details more, it involves two processes, and that can allow the government to basically talk up or down the significance of what's involved depending on the EU law. So the break is the first part of the process, and that has to get consent from 30 MLAs from more than one party. But whereas before we had the petition of concern here where it had to be a cross-community consensus, technically I don't think they need that. So technically two unionist parties, 30 or more MLAs from two unionist parties can say, OK, no, we don't like the EU law, but the break doesn't actually stop the law from coming in. It just slows it down. And then that decision goes to the UK government and whichever minister is sort of in charge of that legality around that time. They can actually choose whether the law is going to come in or not. So I think the thing to remember as well, no one thought that the EU were going to bring in a sort of mechanism that would allow full stop, you know, parties here to full on stop their laws from coming in. So I think the DUP are more annoyed at the spin that the Tory government has sort of put on it to making it seem like it's more than what it is. And I really, truly hear it. Anything can happen at the minute, but it just looks like we're not going to have a functioning executive in Northern Ireland anytime soon.
Yeah, and on that note, the DUP has set up a special panel to examine all the details of the Windsor framework before the party decides whether to return to Stormont. Is it likely that we will see the DUP again saying we're not going back into Stormont?
Yeah, I do think. I think that is the question everyone's thinking. Is it enough to get them back in to discuss this? Because one of the circumstances, one of the sort of extreme circumstances in this Stormont break legislation, in that, you know, the UK ministers can just basically do whatever they want regarding the EU law, is that if there is no functioning government here in Northern Ireland to decide. So I think that's also their way of trying to press the DUP and saying, well, like it or lump it, you know, you might as well go in and make the best of what you have. But at the same time, you know, the DUP's point as well is that a lot of parties here, that like Sinn Féin and Alliance, so the more Republican or centrist party said that there was going to be no movement to the Northern Ireland Protocol. That's just the way it was, and they had to deal with it and get back into government. The DUP dug their heels in, whether it's right or wrong, and the UK government did change the Northern Ireland Protocol and showed that things could be moved on it and came up with this new deal. So I think the DUP will maybe try to push it a bit more to see if they could get a bit more out of the UK government. So whether it's better for the UK government to dig their heels in now and say, no, this is the best deal you're getting, which at the moment it seems that they're doing, is yet to be seen, but I definitely don't think anyone is expecting a functioning executive back in the North anytime soon.
Okay, I just want to come back to that point in a moment, Niamh, but I have the article that you've written in the Belfast Telegraph in front of me, and the Prime Minister's official spokesman said, "We remain confident that this is the best deal for Northern Ireland. Of course, we wanted to give the DUP and other parties as much time as possible to consider the deal and come to a view. Equally, we need to provide certainty to the people and businesses of Northern Ireland Ireland, which is why we have started the process of votes. The DUP are important partners in this. We want to answer any further questions they have and provide any necessary reassurance, and we stand ready to do that. So on that note, and just to finish up where we started, the government is insisting, the UK government insisting, that it has no plans to renegotiate the Windsor framework, even though the DUP have said that they'll vote against it in the Parliament. What happens in that situation then? The DUP will vote against it. The UK government say we're not renegotiating. Where do you go from there?
Well, I know that the Foreign Secretary, James Cleverly, he's due to meet with one of the EU, I think the European Commission President this Friday, one of the EU representatives. So there are obviously still talks ongoing there. But I think from the UK government's point of view, they think that they strongly believe that this is the best deal they're going to get to with the EU, with the European Commission, because, I mean, this has been ongoing for how long now, and to even get until this point. So I do think it's going to be a case of, it'll probably be a bit of a standstill and a standoff between the UK government and the DUP. The DUP are under a lot of pressure as well from the other parties here. The more moderate Unionist Party, UUP, obviously Sinn Féin and Alliance, they're very pro the protocol, but they're very pro the Windsor framework, because it has opened up, the big thing as well, it has opened up trade more. We've got these red and green lanes now as well, so it means that the green lane is for goods that are coming into Northern Ireland. They're not submitted to EU checks as they have been under the protocol, but goods moving on to the south, to the Republic, they'll go through a red lane and they will have checks. So it has opened up access in terms of trade and business in Northern Ireland more. So economically, that's what the more centrist and the national parties are looking at. But it does look like it will just be a sort of a standstill, because the DUP also know they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Their voters, I think there was a poll we had ran the other day, over 73%, over two-thirds of DUP voters don't accept the Windsor framework and don't accept the Stormont break and wouldn't want them going back into government over it. So I think it will be a bit of a standstill as well, and it's especially who will shift first, the DUP or the UK government again.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see what happens then on Wednesday, but for the moment, that is Niamh Campbell, journalist with the Belfast Telegraph, reacting to that news that the DUP will oppose the British government in this week's first parliamentary vote on the new Windsor framework. Thanks for your time, Niamh, and a very good morning. Now, if we go back to local issues and issues closer to home, and on the Athy Municipal District, Labour Councillor Aoife Breslin is with us. Good morning, Aoife.
Morning, Owen, and how are we all doing this morning?
Good, thanks. Some of those local issues that you have been raising with the council and St John's Estate in Castledermot, you want the council to begin the taking in charge process there?
Absolutely. This is an issue that I've been raising with the Development Control Unit within Kildare County Council for a number of months, and I'm pleased to say that we have got some movement, some positive news on it. The Development Control Team in Kildare County Council submitted the necessary taking in charge documentation and surveys to Uisce Éireann, also known, previously known as Irish Water, on the 7th of November. And this is a schedule of works, you know, that needs to be carried out prior to taking in charge of the estate. They wrote again on the 2nd of March asking for an update in relation to it, and we are hopeful that we will get that update very soon. Then following from that, there's a number of scheduled works which will have a cost implication to the council for the green area. Some of the boundaries on the green area needs, on the open space and green area needs work. And I'm happy to say that yesterday I secured €10,000 from local property funding to carry out those works. So it's a very, very positive story. And can I thank the Development Control Team in Kildare County Council, because really and truly in the last number of months they have been reconfigured as a unit and they are doing some really good work throughout the county. And we are seeing quite a few of these estates that had been sitting there for so long now being able to take under control in the council. And it means so much to people because, you know, they're no longer left in a quandary.
OK, I just want to raise another issue with you, Aoife. This morning we spoke to Frank Taff on our Lily White Spotlight feature, and he did a great piece on the town of Athy. Some of the messages that have come in have said that they, you know, people love living in Athy, they think it's a beautiful town, but the dereliction is just a blight on the area. And I know we had a conversation about Castledermot in the same light as well. What's your view on the derelict sites in both of those towns?
Look, you know, in both those towns. And I suppose the nature of towns has changed over the years, and you know you don't see people living in town centres as much as you did previously. And look, the shopping element has changed of people as well. So look, Athy does have, you know, and I've often, which may sound weird or a bit strange, and people will say I am a bit strange, I've often sat at night counting up the amount of derelict buildings in Athy and trying to get onto the council in relation to it. We have served notices, as you may, and I'm not sure I didn't hear your piece this morning because we were doing clinic, but we have served notices on a number of premises, on the doors of those premises, looking for the owners to come forward to Kildare County Council and enter into discussions with us in relation to whether we can revamp, whether we could purchase them, with the idea of turning them into residential properties. Again, that unit within Kildare County Council has been developed. Additional staff, I'm happy to say, have been put in it. And you have seen a body of work starting that they are calling out to interested our owners to come forward and let us try and work with you to revamp our towns and revamp the middle of our towns. So I would expect a good deal of work to go on in that in the coming months. And I think it is a positive. Look, Frank always is good at highlighting, and you know, and he adores the town. He lives, breathes Athy, as we do all. But you know, there are changes that are needed. We no longer can have these long, long streets with shops in them because people don't shop like that anymore, unfortunately. But let's turn them into residential. We are in a housing crisis, an absolute housing crisis. I've done clinics this morning. Everybody coming through my door was in a housing crisis.
Similar situation for Castle Dermot as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Castle Dermot is no different. And again, you know, there's been some good developments in Castle Dermot. You've seen the square there with the new restaurant there, but there's much more work that's needed to be done. But I'm very hopeful that this unit in Kildare County Council has a finger on the pulse. There is finance there. We are looking for owners to come forward, and we will go to CPO if we have to.
Okay, on that note, Aoife Breslin, thanks for your time, Aoife.
Thanks, Owen. Mind yourself. Bye-bye.
Labour councillor on the Athy Municipal District, Aoife Breslin there. Thanks for joining us. Now, just before we take a break to finish up, I'm taking a look here at the latest and back to where we started with the eviction ban, and the Cabinet are currently meeting in Dublin with ministers expected to finalise a government counter-motion to a Sinn Féin proposal to extend the eviction ban. Coalition leaders meeting last night are said to have reached broad agreement on the text. It's expected to include details of the measures already underway to assist the rental sector and to help prevent homelessness. The Sinn Féin private members' motion will be debated for 2 hours this evening in the Dáil, but won't be voted on until tomorrow night. Several independent TDs have indicated that they will reserve judgment on their positions until they see the counter motion. And of course, one of those independents is Cathal Berry in Kildare South. Be interesting to see which way he sides with. Members of the regional independent group have said that their support will be dependent on the government accepting amendments to their counter motion. Independent TD for Galway East, Sean Canny, published 8 amendments last night. These include a tax relief scheme for small landlords, guaranteeing HAP payments to landlords where the tenant defaults, and removing barriers to older people in long-term nursing home care who wish to lease out their homes. So that will be really in the headlines over the course of today and tomorrow. And of course, we'll keep you up to date on KFM. Just going back to some of the messages then before we finish up, Bridget Kavanagh in Monastrevna sent an email in relation to the Oghill HICWA inspection report. Well done to all at Oghill and their team from a Monastrevna listener. Also, Andy in Athy says the truth of the matter is the DUP are acting like a wounded animal, always at their most dangerous. Donaldson knows he is on a sinking ship. He and his political party must realise that they are going to be squeezed out. How many bonuses do they want from the EU and the UK? That comes in from Andy in Athy.